Jesus is the only way to have peace with God. Though there is only one way to God, everyone's journey to Jesus is unique and magnificent. Here is a story of one's journey to Christ, now on Redemption Report. Welcome to Redemption Report. Today I have a friend that I've known for several years, and when I started thinking about doing this podcast, he's someone that I really wanted to make sure his story got out there. So I'm glad that he was able to join me today. He lives down in Arkansas, but we met through a mutual Flatirons group that we meet together with online on a regular basis. So today I have Adam Porter with me. Adam, thank you for making your way up to Kentucky to record this episode and join us.
Absolutely, Timmy. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So I'd like to know a little bit about how you came to where you're at today, kind of your background. And obviously, I know a lot of your story involves, you know, how you got to be. But I guess for starters, we met through a church called Flatirons out in Colorado, through an online group that I lead. So you just joined the group and we met several years ago. But I guess, where did you grow up, and where did life take you for the, you know, kind of your early elementary years?
So I grew up in Northern Virginia, about 15 minutes outside of DC. So when my parents moved there in the 70s, I think it was, you know, kind of a middle class neighborhood, you know, up and coming, you know, cool new development. By the early 90s, I guess the rest of society had moved up to bigger and better, and so this was kind of considered low income, and I guess became kind of what people would call ghetto or whatever. You know, there's a lot of gangs and drugs and alcohol and stuff like that in the neighborhood. But, you know, I guess I maintained my innocence early on in my upbringing there. But I saw the effects of that kind of lifestyle, and knew I didn't really want to be a part of that. Mm. You know, they were all the bullies and the mean guys that picked on me for being the little white boy. And, you know, so, okay. But I grew up with two sisters. They were 13 and 11 years older than me. So they had moved out by the time I was 6 or 7, I believe. But my mom and dad, were incredible people and raised me to be an upright person. They just were very big on morals and values, and very Christian morals and values. I know my mom was brought up in church. I don't know that my dad really was, but, they were both professing believers, and we went to church on occasion, but not so often. There were seasons where it was like, we're going to try to find a new church and we're going to try to stay there and be consistent in attendance. I think I was quite rebellious of that. Whenever I went to Sunday school, things seemed kind of clicked up and I never felt like I fit in. And, you know, maybe there would be a couple kids from school there, but just never felt like the place for me, yeah. I guess, so to speak. And so I think I made it difficult for them to habitually attend.
Yeah, I'm sure that goes hand in hand. Like, you know, if you're not consistent, it's hard for anyone to feel like connected. I mean, the kid that your parents move every year or two, it's hard to make friends or, you know, feel like you're from anywhere. So I imagine same thing with church. But obviously from the parents' perspective, if you're... your kid isn't responding the way that you desire them to, then it'd make it a little more difficult to stay somewhere. So yeah, I can see that. So do you remember any of those early interactions at church? Do you remember hearing the gospel or hearing about Jesus, or what do you remember about church?
The church we attended the most, Sunday school, was all the kids sitting in a room. I don't know if you're familiar with this. Whenever I brought it up in conversation, no one even knows what I'm talking about, but there was a show called McGee and Me.
Okay. Focus on the family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't remember it having explicit gospel conversations throughout the show. Now, I may be wrong about that. If there were, they just went over my head.
Yeah. There's actually two versions of that, oddly enough.
Okay.
So they have the version that had the Christianity built into it. Okay. And then they made another version for public schools that took all that out, but it was very moralistic. So they all had life lessons to learn, but yeah. The Christian version had a little bit extra where they go into God's word and whatnot. So okay. I almost wonder if maybe your church, either you were perceptive enough to know, it's like, hey, it's because it wasn't like a super strong one, but mm-hmm. I wonder if maybe your church got the public school version.
Yeah, it really makes me curious now too. I almost would venture to say that is the version we had, because I don't remember Bible verses being quoted. I do remember it being, you know, good life lessons and be a good person type of deal. And, you know, ultimately that was the way I viewed all of it was, you know, we come here to like learn how to be a good person. My mom and dad already taught me that and established that in my life. And in all honesty, I think there was probably a lot of self-righteousness to where it was like, I'm already better than all these kids. I'm a great kid. I make straight A's. I'm nice and kind to my neighbors. And, you know, I don't curse at school. And, you know, just all mm-hmm. that kind of stuff where it was like, I think I've got this all figured out. I am a good person. And so what's the point of this? I don't need this.
Yeah, I mean, church doesn't really make sense unless, you know, Christ is a part of it.
Yeah.
Like, if it's just a place to go be a good person or be moralistic, like, there's plenty of other opportunities to do that. Right. Plus, plenty of places in the world to be hypocritical, mm-hmm. which, unfortunately, a lot of churches are like that.
So,
yeah. So, when's the first time you actually heard the true, authentic gospel?
So,
or what were the circumstances that led to that?
Yeah, so I know that my parents did do some of that in my early upbringing. We read the Bible each night up until a certain point. I remember that kind of dropping off, but, you know, we had kids' Bibles and that kind of thing, and I remember hitting all the highlights, like the major Bible heroes. I loved Samson, you know, I loved David and Goliath. You know, those were things I remember, and I do remember the name of Jesus being brought up, but I don't remember having any clear understanding of the gospel whatsoever. It was actually when we lived in Louisville briefly for about 9 months, and a friend of mine at school invited me to go to church with him, and so I was a part of the youth group, and we went to a youth retreat for Halloween. And it was called the Masquerade Ball. And kind of the basis of it was, we're all wearing masks. We're all trying to fit in. None of us are really being our true, authentic selves. And we have to take off the mask. And God knows and sees who we truly are underneath it. And, you know, that was the premise of the whole conference or whatever. But I do remember them giving a very clear gospel presentation and myself responding to it. You know, I kind of did the whole walk the aisle type of deal, and prayed a prayer. But, you know, to be perfectly honest, nothing changed. So that was when I was 13, and then we moved back to Virginia. And my mom died a month or two later. And so if there was any faith there whatsoever, that was completely demolished when my mom passed away.
Yeah. Yeah, that's tough. And I would imagine any momentum towards growing faith would have definitely taken a sharp, you know, hit mm-hmm. to say prioritizing church attendance or following God when there was a whole family, when you have something like that transpire, it rocks you literally. Mm-hmm. And, you know, probably one of, it doesn't sound like maybe you like church, you didn't go to church following
right.
that tragedy.
No.
Yeah.
it rocked my world. I think it rocked my dad's world a lot worse. You know, they had been married 29 and a half years. And he was just devastated. Like my sisters always said, you know, he died June 12th, 2000 of a broken heart. Wow. so, and I think it was also, you know, so like I said, I don't know that I still had a clear understanding. To me, it was still very moralistic. It was still very, I'm a good person, and because of what Jesus did, that's going to help me be even better. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I'm already bringing a lot to the table, and then God's just going to add on to that. Mm-hmm. And so for my mom to die, and unexpectedly, like she had gone to work that day, everything was fine. Wow. And she died in our living room, you know, a blood clot went to her lungs. Like I was sitting there working on a school project, and she dies in my arms right here in our living room that we've lived all our lives. And I think that just, you know, aside from the obvious, you know, oh, I just lost my mom kind of deal, the reality was, like, I'm a good person. Good things should happen.
Right.
You know, like, I haven't done a bunch of bad things, and so I don't deserve for this bad thing to happen. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just the cognitive dissonance that created within my mind, it just didn't make any sense. And so it wasn't just my faith that was rocked, but it was my whole, like, schema, my whole perception of the world, just everything that my worldview encompassed was just completely shattered. Like, nothing made sense, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I would imagine, you know, going back a couple months to Louisville, Kentucky, where you made that profession, you know, it sounds as though, you know, I've been to a lot of those type of conferences or, you know, revival type meetings. Camp has them oftentimes where, you know, there's a lot of emotion and it's very compelling and, you know, debate for another time whether those are helpful or not. But, mm-hmm. you know, there definitely can be a lot of fruit, but you even made a profession of faith. And I would imagine in your own mind, you're saying, well, God, I'm trying to do the right thing. Like I responded and yet you're doing this to yeah. me. So, what happened next that, you know, kind of, pushed your journey along? Like, cause obviously, you know, your mom passed away. That's a huge hit. You're trying to figure out how to cope. Probably God is one of the last things, except for maybe that wrestling match that, you know, God, you're not good, or, mm-hmm. you know, why would this even be allowed to happen? So, what was the next thing God used in your life to reveal himself? I know there's a lot, but
so, you know. Yeah, and reveal himself is funny because so the wrestling match had definitely begun, and to question God's goodness was just every second of my life. You know, there was no way that a good and loving God could take my mom from me. Mm. And a year later, I think the only thing my dad and I had really resorted to cope was shopping. We had always been, you know, I don't want to say poor, but much closer to poor than to rich, you know, mm-hmm. if you had to put it on the scale somewhere. And so, like, I remember the first time I had a pair of name brand shoes was seventh grade or so. And so, once my mom passed, we got life insurance money. And I think my dad had always wanted to buy nicer stuff, and I had always wanted to buy nicer stuff. And that
you were the only two left in the house at this point, right?
Yeah. Okay. And so, it just made sense that, you know, now I can get a current gaming system and now I can get all the Nikes I want. And, you know, so that was just really how we coped and would go to the mall on just almost a daily basis. And so when I was 15, all of a sudden my dad had to get like kind of major neck and back surgery where some of his, the vertebrae discs had deteriorated.
This was and, 2 years later?
Just a year
just
later.
Just a year later, okay.
Yeah, just right over a year from when my mom had passed. And so he goes in for the surgery, comes out of it, and they say, wow, we've never, you know, he's in OR, and they're saying, wow, we've never seen anyone, you know, take it this well and start to recover so well. And they released him early from the hospital. And so he came home. We thought everything was going to be great. And my neighbor noticed, hey, your eyes look really yellow. You look jaundiced. And so, you know, I guess there was some level of concern. I had no idea what that meant. But so he went back for a follow-up and they said, yeah, you are jaundiced. There's something obstructing your bile duct. And so they ran some tests and discovered that there was a cancerous tumor obstructing his bile duct. And they were going to have to go in and try to do surgery and take a piece of his stomach, a piece of his kidney, liver, pancreas. Yeah, so he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And so, yeah, I was 15, hadn't even begun to cope with the loss of my mom.
Yeah, year before, yeah.
And pancreatic cancer at that time, which I think it may still be. I think things have improved a little, but at the time they were saying there was a 5% chance he would make it the first year and a 2% chance he would make it a second year. So it was just the odds were stacked against him. There was no chance that he was going to be a survivor. So I guess, yeah, that was really the next big hit. So that time, you know, it was kind of just, what's this all about? You know, what am I here for? I don't even think I cared about like why me anymore. I just kind of accepted that this is my lot in life, but if this is how God wants to treat me, then I will do everything I possibly can to defy and rebel and disrespect and sin against him. And so it was just rebelling. It was rebellion against God. It was rebellion against the way my parents had raised me. You know,
you tried the good route. Yeah. You tried being a good person and look how that, you know, your perception was look how that is affecting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Years of being on the All-A honor roll. What did it get me?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and my teachers didn't care that, oh, you've always been a great student, or I don't even know if they cared that my mom had died. It was just, you're not turning in your work.
Yeah.
All right, well, my dad's got cancer and he's dying in front of my eyes every day and I'm having to take him to chemo and radiation and stuff. And so, yeah, schoolwork's the last thing on my mind.
Sure, sure.
So this is where that whole bad neighborhood comes in, because all these guys that had kind of bullied me, you know, they actually seemed to care, you know, which interestingly enough, like I think that they could appreciate hard times. They could appreciate trials and tribulations. They understood the struggle. So they were sympathetic to it to some extent. And then the friends that I had grown up with, you know, they were like, oh, you're not like fun and funny anymore. You just, you always seem down and depressed. You're not fun to hang out with. So we don't really want to be your friend anymore. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, cool. All right, well, I don't need y'all then. And so a friend at school said he had lost his dad right around the same time I lost my mom. And, you know, I think I may have asked him, like, because he just seemed fun and funny. Mm-hmm. And it was like, well, why isn't he taking his loss as hard as I am? Mm-hmm. And he said, no, man, you just get high, just smoke weed, you know, it's fun. Like, you want to be fun and funny, man, just come hang out. We'll smoke weed. We'll get high. You forget your problems type of thing. And to some extent, I mean, that worked. I mean, that's why it's such a good lie, is because there's a little bit of truth to it. You do momentarily forget your troubles. You do think, oh, things aren't so bad after all, for 10 minutes at a time type of deal. But so kind of that gateway drug led to just, it wasn't just a gateway to other drugs. It was a gateway to a whole lifestyle for me. So, you know, it's like, oh, well, let's go to this neighborhood to buy drugs. But then it's like, well, we become friends with all the drug dealers and now we'll just join their gang. And so
I think this is all happening 15, 16 years old.
Yeah.
You know, obviously you don't have really, I mean, it sounds like your dad hasn't passed away at this point, but like you don't have a parental guide in your life at this point. You're right. Just Adam on his own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and not only did I not have like a parental guide, but I had become the caregiver. Like there was this role reversal where, he wasn't responsible for me. I was responsible for him.
Pressures that really no kid should have crossed on them. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I was having to go do the grocery shopping and like, I think I had my permit, but he was too weak to go get in the car and didn't want me to drive. And so I'd have to walk to the grocery store and bring back the six packs of Ensure, you know, to try to get his weight up. And, you know, I was making all his meals and I was doing the laundry and I was, I don't guess really cleaning the house, but whatever, you know, to keep up an image.
So how long did that that last? How long were you caregiving for him?
Well, until the day he died. So I was 16 when he passed away.
If we're doing math correct, this 2 years after.
Yeah, your so mom it is closer to 3 years. I had just turned 14 when my mom passed and was close to 17 when my dad passed. Yeah, but still. But yeah, 2 years, 14 to 16 kind of thing. Wow. And so I had already dropped out of school.
Okay.
You know, had one foot at home trying to take care of my dad and the other foot really heavily into the streets and was already doing a lot of hard drugs and drinking every day and that kind of thing. So,
so where did that propel you? I know, you know, we can go into a lot of detail of specifics of what happened and whatnot, but what kind of overarching, what did that road lead you to? Your dad passed away. You're on your own literally now.
Yeah.
And what takes place then?
So I did try living with both my sisters. They became my legal guardians.
Okay.
Started going to college a month after my dad died. I guess I had just turned 17 and, I'm going to college and I'm going to be a psych major. And, you know, I'm in English class writing papers about how I just lost both my parents. And it was like unbelievable. It's like this miracle story of how, wow, this kid is overcoming all his hardships and stuff. But I was dead inside. And I was really just using time at college as a front to get my sisters off my back and so that I could go to school and get high and sell drugs and all that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, the reality is, just things did not work out with my sisters. I ran away. And so now I was officially on my own, homeless, you know, slept outside, did all that kind of stuff. But did a lot of couch surfing with, you know, either friends from the gang or people I grew up with, stay a night here or there, sleep in someone's car for a couple days. And so then I started doing some moving around. You know, I think it's easy to believe that, okay, the problem is here in this place, but if I just run in a different direction, I can get away from all this. Well, not if everything you're running from is really just what's inside you. You know, the problem wasn't external. The problem was with what was in my heart. And so the depression came with me wherever I went. The drug addictions and alcohol addictions went with me wherever I went. And just the absolute just hopelessness and despair, you know, that was something I couldn't shake or escape. And so I did do some running around the country and everything, but ultimately ended up back in Virginia because that's what I knew. That's where all my gang friends were. I knew that they would, in some sense, take care of me kind of deal, or at least I'd have some companionship to sit there and get drunk and high every day.
Sure.
So
And it just a quick break from that, like, as you're telling your story, it, you know, kind of interesting how as seemingly innocent or, you know, as insignificant as a decision, you know, you made or your parents made early on not to be a part of a community, you know, as Christians, we believe that it'd be a church is a good place to find that community. But, you know, it's like, oh, we don't have that. But then when the tough times do start coming, then you don't have anything, or you're more easily drawn to because a bad community, some place that's going to provide those needs that we all have as humans. We don't want to be alone. We need comfort and help. But unfortunately, we start looking in all sorts of areas. And so it's just fascinating. Like, you know, your story plays out to that where, you know, perhaps, you know, just even at this point in your story, perhaps things could have been very different had that been a role.
Yeah.
But at this point in your story, you're trying to find it in whatever way will be there, because you've lost a lot and you didn't have anything else to fall back on.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So what obviously, you know, there's a lot of tough stuff going on. What did God do in your life to bring you to a point where you said, hey, I need you? Like, what were the circumstances surrounding that?
Took me to jail.
Okay.
So it wasn't my first time, but it was the first time that there was no chance of me talking my way out of this. You know, I mean, caught red-handed, multiple robberies occurred that night, and this wasn't the first time. I mean, so yeah, this is something that I pursued, you know. They were called stick-up kids, and I wanted to be a stick-up kid. You know, you don't even have to sell drugs, you don't have to work, you don't have to, you just go around robbing people and just take other people's money. You take what they worked for, what they earned for their family, and you know, who cares, because only the strong survive, and no one's given me anything, and God and the world has taken so much from me. So it was, I mean, it was such an easy choice. There wasn't really a guilty conscience over it. It was just, this is life. Mm-hmm. Life's hard. Oh, I'm sorry you got your money taken. You know, it was just so heartless. But, so this time was like, it just felt different. I just knew, all right, I'm going to be here a while. And, so like I said, I did get locked up with a co-defendant. And so he and I had joined Alcoholics Anonymous because that would look good for the judge. You know, we got this pending trial and, you know, they didn't, give us bail or anything like that. So, you know, we're just stuck until trial comes up. And so, excuse me. So we were going to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, this is going to look good for the judge, and no sponsor would ever come. And so we would just get to hang out in the hallway until a deputy came and escorted us back to our cell. So we started looking for other programs that we could both attend so that we could just hang out and have that sense of like normalcy or companionship or whatever. And so, you know, one time we went out to one of the programs and he said, so my mom told me, you know, we just got to start reading our Bibles. We just got to start going to church, just start praying, and God's going to get us out of this mess. And, you know, that is just the stupidest thing in the world to me. Like, if you haven't noticed, God hates me, okay? Yeah. Like, there is no way in the world that I'm going to sit here and, like, grovel before him, and especially, like, hypocritically. You know, because I'm not going to mean anything. If I sit here and pray to God, it's going to be to tell him I hate him. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be to give him some fake praise and say, oh, please help me out of this one. Like, you know, and just so prideful that, like, the last person I'm going to ask for help is God. And he started telling me about things he had read in the Bible. And so he's talking about Matthew and Mark and Luke and John. And I really think he said in Greeks and Romans. And so it just really baffled me, though, because I hadn't spent a whole lot of time in the Bible aside from childhood, you know, Bible stories. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't really understand. It sounded like he was talking about different books within the one book of the Bible, and that confused me. And so, I went on the phone that night, was talking to someone, and said, can you look in the Bible for me? Like, is there multiple books in the Bible? Like, I was just dumbfounded. And she's like, yeah, there's like 66 sections of the Bible. Like, they're categorized by these books. And so it was almost just hurtful that he knew something I didn't know. And so it really piqued my curiosity. And he's not a reader. It's not like he's not one to sit down with a book. Like, he wouldn't do it in school. What in the world is he doing it now? So it was just mind-blowing to me. And it really did make me curious. But it was the deciding to sign up for a church service because we could go hang out there. And so come to find out, he had signed up for Catholic service. I signed up for Protestant. Had no idea what the two meant. So signed up for a Protestant service. Safe to say he wasn't there, but the Lord was. And this guy came in, volunteer. So he came in and he started sharing the gospel. I mean, true, authentic gospel. It was the first time like I understood any of it to any real degree. But mind you, I hate God. I will have nothing to do with him. And I'm so bitter and angry that I even came to this stupid church service if I'm not getting to see my friend, And so I was just so angry. And at the end of the service, he kind of did like an invitation, altar call type of deal. And I mean, he was just locked eyes with me. It was like I was the only one in the room. He was talking specifically to me. And he said, son, you need to give your life to Christ today. And that was what I picked up on. Like, oh, you don't call me son. Like, my parents are dead. The only people that get to call me that, they're dead, And so
that internal or external that you communicated?
It was both. Yeah, okay. I did say it verbally.
Gotcha.
So at the end of the service, I sat in the back because that's where the tough guys sit, and I was the last to walk out. And he said, can you do yourself a favor? And when you've just gotten to the end of yourself, and when you don't have anywhere else to turn, I beg you, for your own sake, just read the Gospel of John. And I said, what's the point? He said, when you get to the cross, you'll see. So later that night in my cellmate had fallen asleep, no more card games to be a part of, just no more distractions, no drugs, no alcohol, nothing to turn to. I started reading the Gospel of John, and he was right. when I got to the cross, I hadn't been to a bunch of Bible studies. I didn't understand a bunch of theology. I didn't know anything about doctrine. The only thing that made sense was that for some reason, he did this for me. He did this because he loved me. And I really recognized that all this time I had spent, declaring my hatred and rebellion and enmity with God, the reality was I didn't know God. Like, I hated just some idea of him that I had. I hated, this construct or this concept that I had just envisioned and dreamed up on my own. I didn't know the true and living God. And so once I began to get to know him, flipping through the pages of John, I fell in love. It was like, how could I think I hated him? Look at his love. And Jesus was just so opposite to everything that I had become. He spent his life helping and healing people. My life was devoted to hurting and harming people. I mean, on every level, like that was just who I was. He was just selfless, and I was the epitome of selfish. And he was humble, and I was so prideful. And he was strong in so many different ways, and I was so weak and desperate. But I had to put on the facade that I wasn't, but I knew that inside, like, I was so weak and just dying. And so, yeah, I think I really just fell in love with who Jesus was. And I begged him, please, if you haven't somehow written me off, if I'm not, which I know I'm worthless, but if for some reason you would want to have a relationship with me, like, please, please come and just walk with me. So that was the turning point.
Wow. That's so cool that, like, you know, you had that opportunity, you know, and it's interesting, just all the different things that fell into place to get you that point in front of that preacher who, you know, looked directly at you. And I've had those times too, where it's like, he's talking directly to me, where it's like nothing else in the world, like just hyper-focus. It's almost like it's void. And just even how he encouraged you to read. And at that point, like, I think it's the same in anyone's story, is when it's time, like God's spirit comes and, like, just, you know, works in such a way that, like, you're not saying no at this point. Like, I'm redeeming you. Mm-hmm. And just to have you, like, read the gospel and have it make sense. 'Cause you can just read through that and be very skeptical, or even, like you said, hate God at the time and just, mm-hmm. yeah, I'm going to prove this wrong. But, like, for him to transform you and just to have you call out like that, that's so, so beautiful. I'm glad you got to share that with all of us. What, obviously you're literally not able to go anywhere. You're locked up. But what changes start to take place, even though you couldn't go and change your life necessarily? There was a lot you can still change on, you know, while in prison. And, but what started to change? What did you start to notice?
This is going to sound like a weird one, but so I had started going to the law library to read through legal books to try to see, I don't know what I thought I was going to find, some type of legal loophole that somehow...
I'm not supposed to be here.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and so I had done that before, you know, before reading the Gospel of John. And so the thing was, is that I had this idea, this concept that, you know, I started looking up all these different crimes I committed and adding up what I could to be, like, thousands of years that a judge could have rightly sentenced me to. And all of a sudden I realized, like, I completely deserved that. So I think just that self-righteous, oh, well, at least I didn't kill anybody, or, you know, that somehow I still had some type of moral ground to stand on, that, like, well, I'm not the worst person out there. I'm not a murderer or a rapist or something, and so I'm just a robber, drug dealer, you know, like, mm-hmm. I don't know that. So all of a sudden, all those kind of went out the window, and I realized that I deserve anything and everything the judge has to throw at me. So I think the biggest thing that changed was my perspective. And my prayer really wasn't that God would get me out of this mess, but that I just wanted to follow him through it. You know, just be with me. God, I trust you to give me as much time as I need to be truly changed by the time I get back out into the free world. Like, if I were to get out today, I'm probably just going to go back to doing the same stuff. And I don't want to do that. I want my life to count for something. I want my life to mean something. I want you to be able to use me. So I want you to sentence me to as much time as you see fit. So I didn't really see, like, a relationship with God as some get out of jail free card, or that he's going to see me trying to do good and he's going to bless me in return, you know. That just never made sense to me, and especially like going through my life, it, you know, I had seen that proven false, you know, time and time again. So I think just that overall perspective shift, but you know, I was really getting into the word and I came across in Isaiah, he says, oh man, I know one's in Isaiah, one's in Psalms, but there's one that says, as a mother comforts her child, so will I comfort you. And then another verse says that God is a father to the fatherless. Mm-hmm. And I think those both just really clicked for me. Like, I found great comfort and peace in that, that, you know, my mom and dad are gone, but you'll comfort me the way my mom would comfort me. Like, the way I just yearn for one of her warm hugs. Like, you can do above and beyond that, you know? And that, yeah, my dad's gone, but you're my father. And so I just started writing letters to all of my friends. And if they came to visit me, you know, I was just sharing like how God was changing my life and changing my heart. And it probably seemed stupid to everyone. Like, literally everyone I was talking to was doing better than me. They're not in jail. They're not waiting to be sentenced to however many years in prison. You know, they might have a job. They might have a family. I don't know. It's like, I just literally had nothing. And so it probably sounded stupid to everyone, but they could see that something was indeed different. So just that level of peace, the hope, the joy that I was able to have. And even though I was incarcerated, I felt more free than I ever had in my life. I mean, I think that highlights the biggest changes. But then in terms of, you know, like a lot of people equate God with, you know, religion and behavior modification. And the reality is that, you know, one, I never would have been able to like clean myself up. I think I had tried that. Like, I tried to quit doing drugs here or there. I tried to quit drinking for a day at a time, you know, and it was just none of that stuff ever worked. But not only that, I think that the reality was, it's a like a root versus fruit issue, where a lot of people think, oh, I've got to like clean my life up to come to God to be acceptable in his sight. And it was like, well, you've already received me and accepted me just as I am. And so now he's able to start making these changes in me. And so I just kind of naturally started, it sounds stupid, but I started cussing less. You know, it was like, and especially in that environment, it's just every other word that comes out of your mouth is a cuss word. That's just how you talk. And I started cussing less, and I felt like it offended a holy God, you know? But it wasn't just like in my speech, it was because the attitude of my heart behind it, you know? And so it's like, I stopped seeing the deputies as like enemies. They're just people with a job. Yeah. And I'm called to love them the same way I am like my fellow inmates. And so I don't know. I mean, there was just so much to it. There's so many dynamics to it, but really it was just, I mean, sometimes I would just see multiple changes a day. Like it was just so fresh, and I was just recognizing that he's literally changing me from the inside out. So it was remarkable, and everyone started to see it, you know, even the people that I'm sure thought I was stupid in the beginning, you know, they started to realize like, man, he seems serious about this. Right. And there's a real difference in his heart, you know, like his.
I love that perspective and how the change started to take place, because, you know, if you had a hope of getting out early, or of this benefiting your life in an external way, like, you know, it would make a lot more sense. And we've seen those people and those stories. And it's like, as soon as, you know, they do the good behavior, then they're right back to doing what their heart is. But like the fact that God's actually changed your heart, and you're like, actually, I am lucky to only have the sentence I have. And in fact, it could surface, more could surface. I could be in here longer.
Yeah.
But like, that's not going to deter me from changing, because that's not the motivator mm-hmm. behind why I'm doing what I'm doing. And so I think that that aspect of your story and how you're changing and growing and what God's legitimately doing, it's not a superficial or external thing. It's a heart change that's mm-hmm. going on. And of course, you know, I'd love to, you know, perhaps we can do a second part at some point, but, you know, and go into more changes or more things that have gone on. But I know, just as part of knowing you and your story, you eventually get out, and obviously there's a lot of details with all this stuff, but, you know, you meet someone, you get married, and now you have like 5 kids, and, you know, you're living down in Arkansas and involved in a local community and a church down there. All with the focus on how do I lead my family well and focus on God. What would you say, of course, there's a lot in all that, but what would you say is, if you could identify one difficult aspect of following God, or what have you found to be challenging? Because, you know, life doesn't just, you know, it wasn't like you got saved and then all of a sudden, boom, I'm out of prison, everything's fine. But like, over that time, whether it be something currently or early on, what have you found challenging to following Christ?
So this is going to sound, I don't know, almost.
I don't know how it's going to sound. You haven't said it yet.
it's going to sound like a turnoff to many, I'm sure. But literally everything, because this is not like the easy path. This isn't the path of least resistance. This isn't the shortcut. This isn't, you know, and it's not the, you know, rainbow road or whatever, where everything just gets paved and there's no bumps or trials or hardships. In fact, if anything, I think I've really come to believe that there's almost more. But how cool that an almighty sovereign God is like actively involved in our lives and desires to continue to draw us closer to him and into his presence, and desires to continue changing on us and working on us, and desires to use those trials and everything. And there's a very real active adversary. You know, the enemy is a real enemy, and he's a worthy adversary, and we do have a target on our back. And now it's not only, you know, a spiritual target, but it's obviously from the world as well. Society and culture says everything good is bad. You know, we're ridiculed, criticized for our beliefs or for our biblical worldview, and everything evil is praised and good and right. And so not only is it countercultural, but it's counter everything our flesh desires. Mm-hmm. You know, our sinful hearts are bent towards sin. If we're wronged, we desire to be bitter, mm-hmm. and we desire to get revenge. Forgiveness and grace is a very foreign concept, mm-hmm. you know.
So that's, you're just much more aware of that struggle, whereas before you just kind of give into it.
Right.
So, yeah.
And so I think just everything that God asks or requires of us really does go against our human nature, but because we've been transformed or are actively mm-hmm. being transformed by the renewing of our mind, and because he's regenerated our heart, we've been born again, our desires do begin to change. And it does start to become or feel more natural at some point along the journey, but that never fully goes away. Those natural desires or inclinations, you know, I've kind of come to believe that I will battle them until I'm done here on earth, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, conversely with, you know, obviously life is difficult, and, you know, it's cool that God is for us, not against us, that mm-hmm. he's indwelt us with the Spirit. But what if you could identify one joy that you've experienced since trusting Christ, what would stand out as something that is a joy?
well, even to know joy, to know what it is, because apart from him and before him, I did not know what joy was. I, at most, at best, knew what momentary fleeting happiness was, and that could always be taken away, even if it was in something as stable as my family. They can all just die in my arms. Mm-hmm. They can just be here today and gone tomorrow. And, you know, anything that we kind of build our identity on can just be snatched out from under us. And so to have something that's stable and a firm foundation that can never be taken away, you know, he's the same yesterday, today, and forevermore. To know someone that's so permanent, that he will never leave me or forsake me. I think that really is truly the greatest joy. Now, there are lots of external things that he's done or blessed me with, but they would all pale in comparison to just being able to fellowship with the true and living God, the creator of the universe, the one who spoke the heavens and earth into existence, desires to have a relationship with me. What greater joy could there possibly be?
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those joys that have to be experienced to be understood.
Yeah.
You can say, oh yeah, this is how it is, but until someone actually is there, yeah, that makes a lot of sense for me who has experienced that. And hopefully that those that hear it can experience it as well.
Absolutely.
As we come to a close of our conversation here, what would be one big takeaway you'd want someone hearing your story? What would you want to leave them with?
That's a difficult one to narrow it down to one. I'll kind of just ramble a little bit and hope it's succinct enough to. So, one, you're never too far from God. I mean, it's not like a bragging thing or a pride thing. I just don't know if someone can get any further from God than I was. That not just, oh, my life didn't line up or something like that, but to outright declare hatred and, like, we are enemies, I despise you, you know, and I'm perfectly okay with you hating me and despising me. Like, we will just be lifelong enemies kind of deal. If he loved me through that, like, he can truly love anyone wherever they're at. And so I think that's one of those things that just people don't quite recognize or realize. It's so frequent that people feel like I'm just too far gone. I'm beyond God's help or I'm beyond hope. And that's a lie from the enemy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. I think that's a good place to leave people with, because, you know, with so many different lies out there, so many different aspects of life that get in the way, people can very easily say, well, it might work for him, but not me. Mm-hmm. I've met people like that. You know, I know there's a lot of people that think that they've done too much, or, well, maybe for them, but I'm not going to connect. And just to hear your story of how, you know, and again, we're to scratch the surface of knowing you during this, in this format of, you know, 30 minutes to an hour, like, you were very articulate in saying, like, I didn't have, you know, what I needed, and I found that in Christ. And so that, mm-hmm, it's really beautiful. I want to thank you for sharing, you know, so much of your story and putting it in a way where we could really just feel that pain and feel that joy that came because of Christ. And I know, even though I've known you for going on 4 years now, like, I was learning a lot sitting over here. It wasn't just like, oh yeah, I've heard all this before. So thank you for going into all that. And I think one thing we didn't talk about that, you know, is maybe for another time to share, you have or you used to have a rap career where you'd take Christian lyrics and put them together. So I know if someone wanted to hear your testimony through that, where could they find that?
So I don't know how to state the link. I guess youtube.com/weareallonajourney.
Yeah, the channel We Are All on a Journey. Yeah.
Yes, sir. So yeah, I do have my testimony in rap form, and amongst other little things I've done either with our youth group or spoken word is something I've started to dibble and dabble with. But yeah, just all with the goal and the intent of pointing people to Christ.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how to lay a beat well enough to be able to, to let you do it right now, but yeah, it's certainly impressive. And I'll admit I'm not a huge, you know, rap guy. I didn't grow up with it, but I've really appreciated how you've been able to put that together. And it's like, definitely a gifting that God has given you, and it's cool to see you use it in different ways, throughout time. But thank you for sharing your story and taking the time to do so.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Timmy.
2 Corinthians 5:17 says, "If anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old has passed away, and see, the new has come." Much like how a caterpillar is no longer a caterpillar once it transforms into a butterfly, when Adam accepted the free gift of salvation that Christ offers, his life no longer resembled the old life he had lived, but began changing and transforming into a new creation, now as an adopted child of God. While doing life at close range in the same small group over the past several years, I have had the privilege to get to know Adam and to see his continued growth. The position of humility and teachability he has embraced has set an example for his family to follow after and has been an encouragement to me as I walk alongside him. Be sure to leave a comment of encouragement or how this video impacted you, and I'll pass it along to Adam. If you enjoyed this video, consider hitting the thumbs up button and sending the link to someone else. The more this podcast grows, the more people it will be able to reach with the gospel of Jesus Christ. More encouraging content can be found at my website, twareproductions.com, including ways to reach out to me directly. See you next week on Redemption Report.